Welcome to Thoughtfully Us, the space where three therapists of color sit down to talk about mental health, real life, and the human side of healing. We're colleagues, friends, and licensed therapists. And so in this podcast, we're pulling back the curtain on not just therapy, but on being people of color in this field and on the parts of life we don't always get to process in the therapy room. So whether you're in therapy, thinking about it, or just trying to make sense of your own healing journey, we're so glad you're here. A quick disclaimer is that this podcast is for informational purposes only. It is not a substitute for therapy, medical advice, or diagnosis. Listening to this podcast does not create a therapeutic relationship with any of the hosts. Tease up for Thoughtfully Us.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Maya's drinking water.
I am.
To our listeners who can't see, the hello came from Morgan and I because Maya was drinking water.
Yeah. Round of applause.
Who is this changed person?
We don't recognize the third co-host. So, what are we talking about today? What is being brought to the table? That makes me think of Red Table Talk, and we're not Red Table Talk, but what are we bringing to the space, I guess? That's what I'll say.
Well, we wanted to follow up on our Ask Me Anything from a couple weeks ago. We talked about, somebody asked us about like myths related to therapy, and we listed just a few, and then we had someone respond to with a common myth that was really very common and important to talk about. So, in that, we asked people if they wanted us to talk more about this in an episode, and we got an overwhelming response for yes. So here it is. Let's get into it.
Well, let's see. The first one, which I like doing actually, is therapists will try to psychoanalyze you. Outside of session, or a lot of times like, oh, you're a therapist, what am I thinking right now, or what am I doing, what can you tell me, that kind of stuff too. Which does not happen. I can guarantee you, if I am somewhere socially not within the workspace at all, like, I am not trying to analyze you, I am not trying to get into your family traumas, I am just not.
We are off the clock.
Yes, we really prioritize our time off and our self-care, and that includes not psychoanalyzing outside of session.
We don't want to. Like, I think that's the thing that people don't realize. It's like, we don't want to be working on our off time. Just like, if somebody like got a paper cut, I doubt a doctor in the room would be like, think about all these potential things it could be, and like, what it could turn into this or that, and make sure you do that. Like, they're probably going to be like, throw a band-aid on, you're good. Like, we don't want it. We don't want to do that. Please.
Please. I don't even know if that's ever happened to me either. That's what I'm like. Yeah. I don't think so. Maybe I don't know if it, I don't think it's happened really to me, but I could maybe see, like, I've heard other therapists, social workers say sometimes it might be at like the grocery store or meet someone for the first time and they get everything, like someone's story, their trauma.
Yeah.
Someone's crying. Like, I think sometimes we might be approachable or like friendly in certain situations that it could be that it could turn into more of this like psychoanalysis, but it's not like intentional, I think.
Are you thinking about, when you say that, our friend that everybody tells their life story? I definitely think it does have, like, I don't know what energy we're giving off, but we have all found each other in those situations where people are asking us, but, or like confiding in us, but we are not like doing that. Also, like, so that idea minimizes the hell out of like psychology and the practice of psychotherapy. Like, it's not something you can just like, you're not like doing it. It's not a one-sided thing that you're doing. It's not
right. Mm-hmm.
collective thing you're doing with your client. So you're not like secretly doing this manipulative thing behind the scenes that the other person has no idea about. That's just like incorrect.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But also, like, based off that point, I feel like a lot of us got into the field because maybe someone in our lives told us we're a good listener. Mm-hmm. Or we're, like, the one people go to for advice, or, like, you're just nice to talk to, like, those kind of things. So I feel like that doesn't go away. So we'll be out and about, and we'll meet someone for the first time, and maybe there's something about the way we communicate or respond that people feel comfortable and feel like, oh, I can open up to you, then I just met you. So
yeah,
I noticed too.
And that's not to say, I mean, like, we're human, and that's mm-hmm. not to say that we don't like see something and think, oh, could it be this? But thinking that and like is very different than the idea of like being analyzed without your consent, which is not something we do or want to do. But I do think it like opens the door for like what you guys are saying of it's hard to turn therapist off. I struggle with that. Like, I struggled a lot initially when I first became a therapist with like communication mm-hmm. or like in my family or my friendships or romantic relationship, like knowing like this is the right or like this is the most effective way to communicate. And like right now I don't feel like doing that. Mm-hmm. And having to take some pressure off myself and be like, okay, yes, I know that, but I'm also a human and I'm going to mess up and I'm going to be a human. That's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good point. In our relationships, maybe earlier on, there was some therapy-like tendencies, but you realize really fast, like, that's not your job. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to mix the roles either, so.
Yeah, you can't be your partner's therapist. You can't be your partner's therapist. Like, a lot about therapy is, like, objectivity and, like, bias, and that plays a role in things. And, like, in other personal relationships, there's mutual benefit, and that makes the relationship very different than in the therapeutic relationship.
Right. Yeah. And there's ethics against it, no matter what board you're licensed under. Like, you cannot have multiple roles with people, so no, you can't be your best friend's child's therapist.
Yep.
Or your doctor's therapist. Like, we try to limit the rules and the ambiguity of it, because it's not healthy. It's not safe. It does more harm than good. But you'd be surprised the amount of people that try to maneuver around those things. And I guess it depends, because the argument that always comes up, and maybe it's because I'm in school, so we always have these debates about ethics, is what if you're in a rural town, you have a specific niche, and you're like one of two therapists that can work with this person, but you happen to know them because you go to the same school or have kids at the same school, or, you know, it's closer than being like just, I don't know, knowing them from a mutual friend or something like that. So yeah, those things come up, and those are special circumstances. Like, you would have to defend and explain to the board or to someone why you need to work with this person. But in most cases, we don't mix that professionally. Yep. No. So yeah, that was a good myth. I like it.
Yeah. It's a good one to start with. Another one I'm looking is, I think we touched on, so at Elevate Mental Wellness said only people in crisis should be in therapy. And like, that's a huge myth. And I was like, yes, that is a huge, huge common myth. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people, even like if you say I'm in therapy, people will be like, oh, what for? Like, what happened? I've experienced a lot of like parents who have been confused about like why their child might need therapy, and like things, a lot of times it's like, they have this, this, and that, like, or what happened or something.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work that way. Like, someone doesn't need to be in crisis to be benefiting from therapy. Somebody doesn't have to have had something huge or go wrong in their life to benefit from therapy. Oftentimes, actually, that's like when we're not, I don't want to say it's too late, it's never too late, but like we would prefer to get in before the crises, and right. That could help maintain like the level that the crisis is. I think I use this analogy maybe like episode 2 or 3, but it's like going to the gym, like taking care of your physical health, right? We don't wait for a doctor to tell us that like something is really wrong oftentimes to take care of ourselves. And obviously like we can all probably be doing better taking care of some areas of our lives, but it's not like the healthiest thing to wait for something to blow up before
right.
going. And I think stigma and access and affordability and just the way our society and culture is set up limits people from getting into therapy at a different time. But that idea that like you have to wait for to be in crisis to be in therapy, nope. Come on over, join us. Yeah.
Mythbusters. I remember we used to watch in science class.
Yeah,
and like middle school.
Wasn't that the best when you walk into your class and the like TV cart was there?
Oh my gosh,
yeah. You saw the cart and you were like,
"Oh, we're watching a movie. We're watching
Best Day Ever. Remember the Titans? Is that what you said?"
That was the one movie.
Thinking about that the other day. We always watch that movie.
But yeah, Mythbusters. Kind of what we're doing right now.
Yes.
Yep. Busting the myths. But
so busted that myth.
Yeah. So important. And it's not like people, I don't know, because I think all of us have worked in different settings. A lot of therapists and counselors work in a variety of systems or like facilities and places. And so some people, they mostly see people at like their crisis point. Like if you work in the ER at the hospital or something or inpatient center, but then the goal is to refer them to a therapist that they can work with so that future crises can be limited or coped with better. Like you learn the skills to help you so you don't go from 0 to 100 in terms of your crisis. So I see where that myth comes from, but it's not true.
Yeah. And these myths are like, I think what we're doing is really important work because there's so much stigma around therapy already. And then there are these myths that people really do believe are fact and, you know, could think about, oh, therapy could help me with this, but why would I go to therapy? Like, why would I be in therapy? And that's wrong. Like that stops people a lot of the time. And, it's not accurate.
Exactly. Exactly.
So thank you at Elevate Mental Wellness for bringing that up because that was a really great and common myth that I think is definitely needed to be busted.
Yes.
The other myth we had on there was that therapy is for people who identify as women. What do we think?
Well.
Oof.
How much time do we have? No, just kidding.
Okay. I feel like this myth opens the door to like fueling toxic masculinity. And I think a lot of times when we're talking about toxic masculinity, we're talking about it on the impact of people who don't identify as a man. And I think a lot of times we do have to talk about it as like toxic masculinity is horrible for men too. Like it really impacts men who have, because men are human beings. Whoa. And so they're going to have emotions. wow. And
wow.
Just like everybody else, they deserve a space to express and feel those emotions, which is a lot harder in a society that says, do not have emotions, keep it together. You have to be the strong one, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that stops a lot of men from like being in therapy, and this, like a myth like this stops them. And then on top of that too, I think like this is this career, like therapists are, a lot of them do not identify as male. So that can be like a point of, you know, I know people have different preferences, not, you know, I know people sometimes prefer like a therapist who is female, but it also, like, some people want to work with a male, and there isn't, like, that isn't as
not many.
Although it is changing, like, I feel like when we went to school, and then like now the interns I see every year, there are definitely, it's changing, but I feel like that's that cycle of like this therapist career population plus this myth just really screws.
The people over. I agree. I think there's something really special for men to work with other men who just know, like they know the way that you've been conditioned. I'm talking to them, I guess. You've been conditioned in society or by your culture, values, family. So they understand like why it can be hard to like vocalize these emotions and regulate them and have anxiety, have stress and all the things. So I think it's really special and really powerful. And so I love seeing like men of color in the field. I'm like, we need you more than people know. Doesn't take away from like working with a wonderful woman of color or woman in general, like us three. But I do think there's something powerful in that dynamic. Same with teachers, like having a teacher as a kid that looks like you and understands some of your lived experiences. It's nothing beats that.
Yeah, just goes back to the importance of lived experience. Like there is something to that. And I think Morgan, I think you said this in like some episode, but a lot of us come into the field because of our own lived experiences, whether it was like enjoying an experience with a therapist or wanting to be like have a different experience with a therapist, like, or just mental health. Like a lot of us join the field because of our own lived experiences. And so similarly, like I think noticing that gap in like access for a huge population, it's a big one.
I agree. I was trying to think too of just kind of the stigmas, trying to look back of movies, TV, things we saw growing up. I'm trying to see, I couldn't think off the top of my head of any depicted like men in therapy, but they definitely depicted women in therapy too, aside from like couples therapy. But
the ones that like have men in therapy, I feel like they like end up having like an affair with their therapist, and it's like, this does not happen. Well,
it happens, but
it happens, but it shouldn't be happening. And like, that's not, you know, always going to be what happens. So that I think also like just skew, it makes it almost like fetishizes it in some
weird. It's like that show Shrinking, which I've never seen season two. Yeah. It's a great show. For those who don't watch, it's about a therapy practice, a group of therapists, and just CBT, it's like their CBT, cognitive behavioral therapist in California, I think, and just explores their lives and their clients and things. And there's a lot of ethical things they do that you were not supposed to or allowed to do. But in that show, you see male therapists, you see male clients, and I think that's been really powerful. But also, I was thinking of This Is Us, the TV show. Sterling K. Brown's character, when he is like having his struggles with anxiety and then seeks out support and, you know, has the help from his family and loved ones. It's like that was big because you don't really ever see, especially a black male.
Yeah.
So vulnerable. So that for me was big. And that came out a few years ago.
Yeah. So. Oh my gosh. This is us. Incredible show.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Everyone should watch that show. Like, it's incredibly written. It's just like such a good show.
Mm-hmm.
Can't say enough about it.
Agreed. Shrinking too. We'll throw out Shrinking in there. Yeah. It is funny.
It's funny.
I have to watch it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Heartfelt. And Harrison Ford is in it. And
mm-hmm.
we love him.
Maya, add that to my list, please.
Yes. Yeah, I will. My list. Yes.
TV and movies.
Yes. And also, Maya helps manage my TV intake. My partner is always like, when I'm watching something really good, he's like, did Maya show you this? And then last week, finally, he's like, Maya has really good taste in TV. I was like, there we go.
Oh, snap.
Thank you.
How does it feel to be
recognized, Maya, for your... I do like it, because some people, a lot of my friends, Nelly included, can only watch like one show at a time, which is fine. I get it. Clearly, I have a lot of free time, but I like watching like five shows at a time, but they're all kind of like different. So different. Like TV is one because it's mindless. Then I have like a comedy, usually a drama, you know, kind of maybe more than one of those, but I like having a lot of shows that I can watch because some I watch on time. So I like wait every week, and then some I'm like watching. And then I have my list of shows to start watching soon. Actually, I just added three today.
Huh?
Yeah.
But Maya.
Severance, season two.
Yes. Morgan never finished Succession.
Oh, yeah.
And she has not finished Severance, so we are not talking to her except during this podcast.
I know, they really only talk to me during the recording of this.
Oops, you called us out. Maya, the thing about your strategy is that when you're catching up on a show that like other people are in our friendship are watching, you're slow because you're managing all these other shows and we want you to catch up so you can talk to us.
No. Nelly's first of all talking about like Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which has like 15 seasons.
Yes.
And I started from the beginning, which is a little cringe to watch because like the early 2000s is actually cringe.
It is.
So I have that, but like that's when I have my mindless shows or just doing like admin and I just need something in the background. So it just takes me a long time. So
no, VPR took you a long time.
It did.
Like, what's VPR?
And Morgan too. I mean, I'm not even gonna touch on Morgan because she is like a turtle through these shows.
I am. But
Maya, I need you to pick less shows so that we can discuss at a faster rate.
Well, maybe I will focus on the shows I have instead of filling the opening slot since the summer I turned pretty is over.
Oh, perfect.
Almost over. There's a rumor that there'll be an extra episode.
I saw that.
And also, I would like to say, mm-hmm. I could be caught up on a lot of these shows, but I'm just lazy and I like being on the living room couch where I watch TV, but football is on 4 days a week.
Oof.
And my TV time is taken. And I could go to a different room in the house, but why would I do that?
Fair.
Okay.
So. And you're more of the social media over football and movies, like you like your movies.
Mm-hmm.
Musicals especially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You.
You love Broadway, where we belong.
So, myth that therapists don't rot all day sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Busted. We try and follow our routines and what we know is best for our mental health. And also, rotting all day sometimes is what's best for our mental health. They don't teach that in grad school.
But they don't. We
learned through our lived experiences.
That is true. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
At all.
last myth that we had was on our Instagram, at least, was that therapists simply give advice. This one drives me nuts.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I feel like I saw this recently on
somewhere.
Because like, we don't give advice. Yeah,
leave us alone. We don't give it. I am in no place to be giving advice. None. I'm trying my best out here.
Yeah, like advice is just such a. I think it's the term advice that also we're just like no, because you'll tell us something. Like someone asked me for like a book recommendation or a way to get more organized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's I'm like, oh, that's a recommendation. But like, I wouldn't want them to be like, oh, my therapist gave me this organization advice.
Yeah.
That's not
right. We teach skills and tools, but it doesn't mean you have to necessarily only do that one thing.
Yeah. We're not. Yeah. We have like no, so actually, red flag low key is, in my personal opinion, if your therapist is constantly telling you what to do, that's not normal.
Not good.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are the expert of your life, and I'm pointing at the screen because that is a slogan that we heard nonstop in grad school. The client is the expert of their lives, and it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know your life, you know the way it works and it runs and what's been helpful, what hasn't. So who are we tell you what to do or not do?
Mm-hmm.
We don't give advice.
Yeah.
We can't.
Can't. It's not appropriate. It's not our role.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel like your therapist is always telling you what to do, then that may be something to think about. And like maybe you take it back to your therapist and say,
yeah,
I actually don't need that, right? Like that's not what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, some people like are more solution focused, and there are some spaces where that like problem solving is the priority, right? Like in inpatient settings or intensive outpatient programs where like we're trying to focus on stabilization, then yes, like we are often problem solving and more solution focused in that way. But it's still not like giving advice. You would be kind of sharing multitude of tools to your client and then seeing what lands with them and like individualizing that to them. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Their thing. So
giving
advice.
Yeah.
You don't want to give advice. And I think that's where like that first thing we talked about where people will be like, tell me what you think. Like I can't tell you what, because that's coming from Nelly. That's not coming from therapist, clinical social worker. That's just Nelly, because, and that has happened in our, like my sessions before. There have definitely been times where I've been like absolutely floored by something, and I've been like, and I've had to say like, I'm sorry, Nelly is speechless.
Yeah, exactly.
Like your therapist though is curious how that landed for you. Like how did that feel?
Mm-hmm.
So that again, human. There are times slip. I'm gonna slip up.
Mm-hmm. And, you
know, different types of people like enjoy that or don't feel comfortable with that. Like some people feel like it makes you more human and like kind of lessens that power dynamic. Other people aren't looking for that. Probably depends a lot on the situation. But overall, we are not giving advice.
Exactly. And so, I think one day we will have a certified mental health coach or career coach or something part of this conversation, future conversation. Because I don't know if advice is like part of their scope of things, and people tend to lump us all together. But
I wonder.
Yeah.
There's definitely an interesting relationship with coaches and therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are both. Some people, the three of us were recently at a networking event where I feel like a few people who were both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
What'd you say?
I remember that now.
Yeah. And I'm like, huh.
It's hard. And I was like, oh.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've like seen people be like adamantly against that and be like, you're skewing like your ethics, and it's just like opening up liability, and then other people being like, nope, that's like fear based. And so I don't know enough about all of that to like have an actual opinion, but there is definitely an interesting relationship between coaches and therapists.
Yes, which we will talk about, and let us know what questions you wonder or have. Like, I was one people decide to have a mental health coach versus a psychotherapist, clinical therapist, you know. Yeah, let us know what you guys think about that as well.
Definitely. I would love to hear that. Yeah. And if you are a coach listening, let us know your thoughts.
Yeah. I'm open to learning and understanding more.
Yeah. Or any other myths that we either talked about today or that you also consider to be widely known or assumed about the therapy space.
Exactly. Yep. I love this topic. It was fun. I do want to say,
yes,
we're recording today on 9/11, and we all went to grad school in New York City. Nellie is not, you didn't live too far from the city.
Yep.
From town. So we just want to acknowledge, and, you know, we're thinking of those who were impacted. Many of us were young, at least the three of us. I think we were in first grade, kindergarten. We were young, but doesn't mean we don't remember. Like, I remember that day vividly. To those, you know, who lost someone, lost people they love, to those who this day is really, really tough. And if you live in the city or like DC even, it can be a lot. And so we're just thinking of you all, and we will actually never forget.
Appreciate you saying that, Morgan, because my husband and I, like Morgan said, we're from New Jersey. A lot of people in our town were impacted. We have a memorial because there's so many people, and it's unfortunately a big one. My partner's father was there and in it, and it's something that like we notice a lot that other people, like growing up there and moving away, a lot of other people don't like talk about, or it's not as like discussed in other places. And that's been a really weird thing for us. And I think, again, as time goes on too, that changes things, but thank you for pointing that out today.
Yeah. Of course. All right.
Do you want to end us on a this or that?
My this or that from I and Nelly. Drum roll. One day we'll get that in the this or that. So I keep seeing all these things about sparkling water, just plain water, versus normal water, and which one's better for you, which ones you should have more of. I think in the summertime, sparkling water is a big thing, especially like seltzer water, hard seltzer, things like that. So since Maya is now part of the water club, I was like, let me ask, because now I feel like you can understand.
I would say, I don't know. When I'm at a restaurant, they ask me still or sparkling, I say still.
Look at you.
But I do love sparkling water.
But does she drink it when she... No.
Well, that wasn't part of this.
Guys, one time, we were in New York, and they were filling up our waters, and... We had all had empty glasses, and like the waiter was filling it up, and Maya literally put her hand over the glass and was like, no. And the waiter was like, what? And she was like, no. And we're like, Maya, like, you can't even look at the water. You can't even have the glass of water there. So I tell this story, and I, with a gentle roast, to also highlight your progress, because,
well, actually, said no, but that was because I knew I wasn't going to drink the water. And so I didn't want the waiter to just pour it and then it sit there and be like a dirty cup. But I guess it would have been classified as dirty anyways.
What? Anyway, your body needed water probably in that moment as well.
For sure.
So
I would pick still. Sparkling water is like electricity water. Like it's like spicy water. Like, it's just weird. It's, like, staticky. I don't, not into it, don't like it.
Wow.
White Claws and High Noons and such did change me in that mm-hmm. way. I did start to appreciate a mm-hmm. seltzer, but regular?
No
thanks. Still water all the way. I don't need static in my mouth.
Interesting. My husband's that way. I love sparkling water, so I'm like, but you know, still obviously I usually have both with me at all times. Still sparkling.
So fancy.
We'll ask the fans which y'all prefer. See you next time. Peace out.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us for today's conversation. We hope you felt seen, supported, and maybe even laughed a little along the way. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss a new one. And we'd love it if you left us a rating or review. It really helps more people find us. You can also connect with us on Instagram @thoughtfully_us and let us know what you want to hear about next. And remember, while we're therapists, this podcast is not a substitute for therapy. If you're struggling, please reach out for support from a mental health professional in your area. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.